Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, September 22nd, 2017. The UNMISS chief weighs in on the peacekeeping force in South Sudan.
One of the things that we have worked hard on doing is to make our troops more mobile, make them more robust in terms of the way that they operate, try and predict and analyze where we might have outbreaks of conflict.
And a South Sudanese foreign ministry officials react to President Trump's remarks about South Sudan.
We heard from Trump himself on conflict and humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, and his comment was very negative. It tells you his administration is not happy with the situation in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The idea being that by getting the parties back to...
The head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan says people are still dying in South Sudan due to the ongoing fighting. In an effort to save more lives, David Shearer says his peacekeepers are becoming more mobile and are getting better at predicting and analyzing where violence might break out in the country. Shearer says the UN Secretary General, the chairman of the African Union, and the Prime Minister of Ethiopia met yesterday in New York on the margin of the UNGA to talk about the revitalization of South Sudan's 2015 peace agreement.
The idea being that by getting the parties back to the table, focusing on the agreement that was already put in place, it might chart the way forward. That's the best chance we've got at the moment, and having the three organizations working together, pulling together and focused on the same thing as I hope will bring the parties to the table and allow us to move forward.
Now, you've held several senior positions in the UN in places that are no strangers to conflict. You were in Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestine. Obviously, all are very unique places with unique and complicated issues. What sets South Sudan apart from your past experiences?
What sets it apart is the degree of underdevelopment. To move from Juba, the capital, to the town of Benchu in the north, where we have one of our largest bases, is a distance of 600 miles. It takes 2 weeks to do that because of the state of the road. It's on a completely different level in terms of development. So it's not just about a conflict we're talking about, which is bad enough in of itself, but it's also about the state of underdevelopment, the high death rates from maternal death, child deaths, etc. That sets it apart from anything I've ever seen before. I've been in war zones before, but nothing like this, where a war zone meets the level of development that is in South Sudan. It's an extraordinary challenge for a country to lift itself out of that and be able to offer a real hope and a real future for its citizens.
Trump has spoken against bureaucracy in the United Nations, and some of his past remarks have been very critical about the progress, or in some cases, the lack of progress made by the UN. How have you reacted to President Trump's comments?
Well, he's right in the sense that the bureaucracy in the UN is stultifying in terms of, in many of the ways that we have to try and just get about around our days. I mean, the recruitment process, for example, is pretty difficult. Getting rid of staff who are not performing sometimes can be challenging. So, look, there's no doubt about that. But on the other hand, when I look at the operations that we are carrying out at the moment, and we've got 17,000 people in the field in South Sudan and 12,000 troops. There is no doubt in my mind that if they weren't there, we would have tens of thousands of people who wouldn't have been able to survive over the last few years, that they are continuing to be able to survive and increasingly, although it's slow progress, starting to go back to their homes and starting to get on with their lives.
Could you talk a little bit more specifically about bureaucracy as it pertains to UNMISS? What are some of the challenges that you guys have had to go around?
you know, I guess it's the same in a lot of large organisations. I think the probably the biggest issues has always been the issues of you know, of recruitment and moving forward. And one of the things that I'm really pleased about is that the new Secretary General is already started to address those. I know that some reforms are coming down the track, which will make it easier for us. This is not a new thing by any means. We've had, you know, various comments made about UN bureaucracy. What we have currently, I think, is a really genuine attempt to try and you know, take us into the a new way forward. And some of his reforms that he announced yesterday, I think, will make that job that much easier as well.
And could you tell me how UNMISS has changed since you took office?
One of the things that we have worked hard on doing is to make our troops more mobile, make them more robust in terms of the way that they operate, try and predict and analyse where we might have outbreaks of conflict across the country and get in before you know, the situation gets dire, rather than trying to respond. So it's about being... What we're saying is being robust, being nimble, and being proactive.
That's David Shearer, Secretary General, Special Representative for South Sudan, speaking to me yesterday from the United Nations in New York. South Sudan says it enjoys good relations with the United States despite recent sanctions imposed by the Trump administration on three South Sudanese individuals for fueling the conflict and obstructing the work of aid workers. U.S. President Donald Trump expressed concerns this week at the United Nations General Assembly over the conflict in South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo, saying he will dispatch Ambassador Nikki Haley, the U.S. permanent representative to the UN, to spearhead peace efforts in the troubled regions of Africa. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Ambassador Maiwenn McCall, a spokesman for South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, says his country appreciates the role played by the U.S. government to end the conflict in South Sudan. President Trump spoke forcefully about South Sudan on the sidelines of the 72nd session of the UN General Assembly on Wednesday.
We're closely monitoring and deeply disturbed by the ongoing violence in South Sudan and in the Congo. Millions of lives are at risk, and we continue to provide humanitarian assistance. But real results in halting this catastrophe will require an African-led peace process and the sincere, really sincere commitment of all parties involved.
The U.S. president told African leaders that millions of lives are at risk in the continent and that the U.S. will continue to provide humanitarian assistance. But an African-led process is needed to bring an end to conflicts in troubled parts of Africa. Juba-based political science lecturer James O'Cook says Mr. Trump's remarks underscore the tension in U.S.-South Sudanese relations.
For the first time, we heard from Trump himself on conflict and humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, and his comment was very negative. It tells you his administration is not happy with the situation in South Sudan.
O'Cook says President Trump's remarks are a sign that the U.S. is willing to work more closely with Uganda and Ethiopia to stop the conflict in South Sudan.
They are spending money and the war is not ending. And that makes them a bit nervous. And that's why they want the African countries, starting from the African Union and the regional bloc like they got, to put more effort to end the war, and also to urge the warring parties to commit themselves to peace more than this escalation of war.
Ambassador McCall chose to put U.S.-South Sudanese relations in a different light.
It is true that the effort that the government is doing here to bring peace always requires the United States to support it. And we are very, very privileged that the U.S. now is working very hard to try to help South Sudan to be able to be on foot in terms of bringing the peace.
McCall says His government has always been committed to strengthening its ties with the U.S. government in the Trump administration and in the Obama administration.
U.S.-South Sudan relations is a very important relation and it's strategic. And so we need support from the United States more than anything else and for us to be able to stand. We are a new country and we came to be a country because U.S. has helped.
But McCall admits U.S.-South Sudanese relations could be better. He says the Trump administration should reconsider the sanctions imposed on a senior South Sudanese minister, a defense official, and a former army chief.
We urge the United States to just, you know, review the sanctions and try to come up with better help rather than sanctions.
Okuk says if Juba wants to improve relations with the U.S., South Sudanese leaders must stop the war and restore peace throughout the country.
You have to stop the violence and improve the humanitarian situation. And then the people can return to South Sudan. Then after that, U.S. can have a different approach to South Sudan.
Earlier this week, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security extended temporary protection status for South Sudanese who wish to remain in the U.S. Temporary protection status is a program for citizens of countries undergoing instability and are residing in the U.S. on a visa. Mr. Trump says he will soon dispatch his UN envoy, Nikki Haley, to spearhead efforts to try to end the conflicts in South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Rebel forces loyal to Riek Machar say they have arrested 14 soldiers loyal to First Vice President Taban Dengai in Dengjuk County of B State. Machar's deputy military spokesman, Colonel Paul Lam Gabriel, says the 14 soldiers led by the Dengjuk County Commissioner traveled from Wat Village to mobilize forces for Deng in Akobo, a village that remains under the control of Machar's forces. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Juba.
Colonel Paul Gabriel Lam says his forces arrested the 14 SPLA-IO soldiers sent to Akobo for trying to recruit soldiers for Taban Dengai. He says the armed men entered Akobo without prior notice to Machar's commanders in the area.
At the moment, they are being investigated. Our MI unit investigating them. Then after that, their fate will be decided with the results of that investigation. This is the situation we are in. What is the situation they are in at the moment? So they were led by a commissioner here to mobilize or to demobilize LIO from the operation.
Taban Deng's military spokesman Colonel Dixon Gatluak confirms 14 civilians were arrested in Akobo, but says the men were not armed. Lam claims the first vice president is using money to entice young South Sudanese to join his forces to fight Machar's SPLM-IO.
There is belief that money can buy everything, including your blood. This is what I think Taban is using these days to buy people. And you come and kill for his own good, because he wants to stay in power.
Gatluak dismissed the accusation, saying that 14 detained men are all peace activists who were engaged in a peace mission in the area.
It's not about coming to join Taban or coming about to join General Salva Kiir. What we have now is a matter of transitional government of national unity. This is what we have in South Sudan, of which each and everybody fall under it. So if it is being led by the president and his deputies, it does not mean that whatever the work is being done by General Taban is for him. We are not mobilizing the forces to join the IO. What we are doing now is the collective responsibility of national government.
Gatluak is calling on the SPLM-IO commanders in Akobo to release the detained men. Akobo area is under the control of Machar's SPLM-IO forces. The South Sudan Army and its proxy militias have been fighting over control of the village since 2013. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus. A group of lawyers is petitioning a court in Juba over the use of the Arabic language. Stay tuned for details.
South Sudanese in the diaspora have mixed reactions about what is happening in their country.
Unity is possible when we stop the hate What are we not doing to bring peace to our country?
Join John Tanza, host of South Sudan in Focus, next week as he engages the diaspora in a spirited discussion about what South Sudanese should do to bring peace in their country. Next week, Monday to Friday, we will bring voices of the diaspora on how to end the conflict in South Sudan.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think money can buy love?
I think money can buy love. Cause, like, when you have money, you do have things, properties. You can buy cars. Like, when I'm poor, I'm from a poor family, and see someone with a car, with houses, with many things. So I can fall in love with him cause he has money. Cause I want to have those kind of properties cause I'm from a poor family.
I don't think money can buy love, because love comes from the heart. Money can't buy genuine love.
Money cannot buy true love, though it can facilitate love. In the beginning, you may attract someone using money, but if your behavior is not well, that relationship cannot last.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A group of South Sudanese lawyers have petitioned the Constitutional Court in Juba to ban the use of the Arabic language in government institutions across the country. The group, calling itself Advocates Without Borders, says the use of Arabic in government institutions such as the judiciary and the Ministry of Interior is unconstitutional. South Sudan adopted English as its official language soon after its independence from Sudan in July 2011. Waki Simon Mudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Advocates Without Borders says using Arabic in government institutions across the country is illegal and contrary to South Sudan's constitution, which authorizes English as the official language of the country. Lawyer Philip Sanyang represents Advocates Without Borders. He says conducting official businesses at government institutions in Arabic is very challenging.
Government institutions, especially the judiciary, the Minister of Justice, and of course the Minister of Interior, who are major stakeholders in this sector of justice as an institution. And use of Arabic has been a major problem. Practitioners, lawyers in the market, most litigators have been having this major problem of whenever you appear anywhere, and then all the documentation, the person you're dealing with, you're being addressed in Arabic, which has caused us a great harm in proper representation of our clients.
Article 6.2 of the Transitional Constitution of South Sudan states that English shall be the official language for instruction all over the country. Sanyang says the petition is in line with the laws of the country.
We have an obligation as citizens of this country. We also have an obligation as members of this society. And if there's anything that we see is not going well, then we ought to point it out. And for people who don't even speak Arabic, you end up not getting what you want to get because of the language barrier.
There are mixed reactions by South Sudanese towards the decision to ban the Arabic language in the country. Juba Town resident Maria Mike says she only speaks English because she was not born in South Sudan. Another Juba resident, who prefers to remain anonymous for fear of government retribution, agrees that speaking Arabic to conduct business in government institutions should be prohibited, but she says people will need time to adapt to an all-out ban on Arabic.
We need to adjust between Arabic and English regularly. But even if we found even within the community we use Arabic language, They usually say that Arabic Juba. Even within the institutions, you can find people even communicating with Arabic, the local one or the classic one. It depends from the background you came from.
Another Juba resident, who prefers to be identified only as Margaret, says Arabic is the language of trade in South Sudan and a time is needed to ban it.
We just got our independence and we are still trying to change our curriculum into English. There are still schools which use Arabic. So changing or banning of the Arabic language in offices now, I don't think it's a right move.
Margaret says abolishing Arabic as a medium of communication at government offices will affect South Sudanese who studied in Arabic. She says many South Sudanese who went to Arabic schools will become unemployed once the use of Arabic is banned in government offices.
Maybe they need to give us a time frame on how this thing should be done. Are they doing something? towards that time.
Sanyang says the lawsuit was filed yesterday at the Supreme Court. A panel of judges will review the petition and issue a verdict. Before gaining independence in 2011 from Sudan, the official languages in what was then Southern Sudan were Arabic and English, as both languages were deemed acceptable for conducting businesses. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Kenya is in uncharted territory as the same institution responsible for the failures in August presidential poll is expected to organize a fresh vote in fewer than 5 weeks. Briefing reporters Friday, the Attorney General sought to stave off fears of an impending constitutional crisis. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's opposition has given the Director of Public Prosecutions 3 days to file charges against Electoral Commission officials accused of bungling the August presidential vote. The results of that poll were nullified by the Supreme Court. Opposition Member of Parliament Godfrey Osotsi says his party cannot allow the same officials to conduct the rerun election, now scheduled for October 26th.
We are going to provide evidence from our ICT people and from our lawyers to support our case, because these elections cannot be free if those individuals are still going to preside over fresh election.
This kind of demand has made legal experts worried about a constitutional crisis if the Electoral Commission fails to hold the new election within the required 60 days of the Supreme Court's September 1st ruling. Attorney General Githu Muigai said Friday there will be no crisis.
Even in the very unlikely event that for whatever reason the election wasn't held on the 60th day, that does not delegitimize the constitutional order of the day. And in many countries, there have been various methods of expanding the time within which something is to be done.
Some legal professionals argue that if the October 31st deadline is missed, President Uhuru Kenyatta will have to make way for a caretaker administration. Muigai disagrees.
To establish any form of government other than in compliance with this constitution is declared by the constitution unlawful. There is no government known to the constitution of Kenya called a transitional government or a caretaker government or any other form of government other than that is defined in this constitution.
Kenyans are divided over the court's decision to throw out the presidential results. The court said electronically transmitted results released by the Electoral Commission were neither transparent nor verifiable, as required by law. The ruling Jubilee Party says the court failed to consider the voters and the final result, which showed Kenyatta winning by 1.4 million votes. Constitutional expert Nelson Harvey says the court focused on the electoral process.
What the Constitution wanted to achieve was to have a very simplistic process where the common man will be in a position to understand how a determination as to who has won the election was arrived at. It was meant to be as simple and as straightforward that everybody will understand.
The voiding of the presidential vote has sparked appeals for the courts to nullify other results from the August general elections. More than 300 lawsuits have been filed so far, mostly by candidates who lost their bid for office. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Anti-government protests broke out Friday in Cameroon's 2 English-speaking regions. The demonstrators echoed calls from separatist groups for Cameroon's southwest and northwest to break away from French-speaking regions and form their own state. Reporting from the southwestern town of Ikona, Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the latest.
Hundreds of youths ran through the streets of Ikona on Friday, cheering and waving palm fronds. They sang songs and carried signboards demanding independence. VOA received reports of youths holding similar protests in other parts of Cameroon's English-speaking regions. Meanwhile, local media reported an explosion in the economic capital of Douala. The explosion followed a bombing in the northwestern town of Bamenda on Thursday that left three policemen seriously injured. No one has claimed responsibility for either incident, but suspicion is falling on a movement that calls itself the Liberation Front for English-speaking Cameroon. Groups that say they are part of the movement have claimed responsibility for burning down schools in the Northwest over the past 2 weeks. The governor of the Northwest region, Adolphe Lelelafrik Debenchofo, told VOA the perpetrators are believed to have triggered Thursday's bombing using a mobile phone.
We have witnessed a terrorist act in Bamenda targeting the symbol of the state, that are the police that were doing their job. As a result of that, we are going to step up our security device to face that new situation.
Anglophone teachers and lawyers went on strike in the Northwest and Southwest in November, demanding reforms to address the predominance of French in the bilingual country. However, calls for full independence soon eclipsed those original demands amid a government crackdown. Militant separatist groups have been going around hoisting the blue and white flag of a new nation they call Ambazonia.
Gloria Caps!
VOA watched as youth raised the flag in the northwestern town of Kumbo on September 18. A man addressed the group. He looked to be in his 30s and wearing dark military attire, but declined to give his name. He said he was an area leader in the Liberation Front.
This is a town that we are bound never to enter. And today, I want to tell each and every one of you, Ambazonia is a free state.
Earlier this month, President Paul Biya ordered the release of 55 strike detainees in a bid to reopen dialogue and defuse the growing tensions. However, the president has said he will engage in no talks that threaten national unity. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Ekona, Southwestern Cameroon.
And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Kona featuring Uhuru by Mafiki Zolo. To Mafiki Zolo featuring Uhuru with the song Kona. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. Have a safe and peaceful weekend, and we'll meet you back here on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.